to our next case, 033666, and it's Marilou Grosskreutz versus Barnhart. Good morning, Ms. Goldman.
Good morning. May it please the court. This is a Social Security disability case. Marilou Grosskreutz hurt herself at work and developed fibromyalgia, among other things. In a quote from the Social Security agent on page 153 of the record, this individual said, her exams, referring to Ms. Grosskreutz, are full of documentation of her tender points, but lack of objective findings that would support such severe restrictions. And I'm afraid that that is the type of thinking that has tainted this entire case. This whole record is replete with findings from doctor after doctor, Dr. Clenamon, Dr. Sora, Dr. Helsch, all finding multiple tender points, multiple trigger points, but the hallmark of fibromyalgia, as this court found in the Sarchet case. But unfortunately, what the ALJ did here is first he started out and he didn't properly evaluate the fibromyalgia. He noted a couple of times in the record that she has these tender points, but then he equally dismisses them by saying that there's no objective findings in the record that would support her the pain and the symptoms that she alleges. So then he goes on to find ways to discount her complaints of pain. He also discounts her treating physician's reports, not just one, but several, saying that this woman is limited to part-time work. That's very important because if she's not able to do full-time work or at least work the type of hours that she did before, which was at least 6.5 hours, then she's disabled. But here, the ALJ mis-evaluates the fibromyalgia. He doesn't give proper reasons for discounting the reports of her treating physician saying she's limited to part-time work. He also ignores, doesn't refer even once, to a report in the record from a vocational expert. And this was not just someone who was reviewing a record, but this was Mr. Tom Karras, who at the behest of the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation from the state of Wisconsin gave a thorough vocational evaluation to this woman. He administered some psychodiagnostic tests, he reviewed the records, he talked to her. And Mr. Karras, on page 166 of the record, he concludes, Marilou's chances for success at full-time employment at a competitive pace, at a consistent basis, are predicted to be poor. The judge does not look at, he doesn't refer to it even once. Now, in their brief, the government argues that the ALJ could disregard Mr. Karras' report because they said that it was redundant and, as such, it didn't add anything. Well, the government's argument that it was nothing but a redundant report, that's post hoc conjecture. And I think when the main issue in this case is, can this woman, can Marilou Grosskreutz perform other work, or could she perform any work at all? And we have a vocational report from someone who has administered psychodiagnostic tests, talked to her, reviewed the record, and says that her likelihood for success at work is poor, then at the very least, this court has numerous times said that the judge has to articulate his reasons. I don't think there's any way that this court can look at this decision and have any idea of what weight the judge gave to Mr. Karras' report, and it's not simply redundant. It's very, very important. And then the judge also makes further mistakes in terms of his review of the credibility of Ms. Grosskreutz. In the Sarchet case, the court explained that it was improper for the ALJ to discount Ms. Sarchet's credibility because of things like Ms. Sarchet wasn't a sophisticated individual. She testified at the hearing that she had had a heart attack. And the judge in the decision says, well, obviously she isn't telling us the complete truth because she never had a heart attack, but the fact was She had had an incident that to her very much felt like a heart attack, as this court pointed out, so that there wasn't an inconsistency. That was just her way of expressing herself. Well, I think it's very similar in this case as well. For instance, the judge takes umbrage at the fact that Ms. Grosskreutz testified in answer to the question, well, why didn't you have surgery on your shoulder? And she said, well, my doctor said it was because of the fibromyalgia. And the judge, in the credibility finding, says, well, no, it wasn't. They didn't do surgery because of fibromyalgia. They didn't do surgery because she didn't have a surgically remediable condition. But you have to keep in mind, again, Ms. Grosskreutz, like Ms. Sarche, wasn't a sophisticated individual. She only has a 10th grade education. She has mental impairments. And when the orthopedic surgeon says, when the orthopedist says, we can't do anything for your shoulder, your main problem is fibromyalgia, then when she testifies that they didn't want to do surgery because of fibromyalgia, that's not inconsistent. The judge also says he's decreasing her credibility because she testified that she had spasms, that she's had lots of constant spasms, and he only sees a couple of references to it in the record. And although it's true, there are only a couple of references to muscle spasms in the record, however, and this is something that the ALJ never mentions, practically from day one after she had the accident in February of 1999, she has been on medication specifically for muscle spasms. She was prescribed Roboxin. After the Roboxin, she was prescribed Flexeril. She was on Flexeril for a very long time, and then she was prescribed Neurontin. Those drugs, in addition to all the myriad of other drugs that this woman is on, were specifically to treat muscle spasms. So for the judge, without even mentioning that she's taking medication for the muscle spasms, to say, well, she testifies about muscle spasms and I don't see them in the record, so I'm going to use that as another prong to find against her credibility. When you look at what's going on in this case, it's just another indication that the judge did not do an adequate job in assessing Mary Lou Grosskreutz's fibromyalgia.
How about the judge's finding that she engaged in symptom magnification because she exaggerated the amount of weight she gained?
Your Honor, I think that this court said in Carradine, the judge in the credibility determination has to explain what the connection is between what he's finding and his final conclusion. I would suspect that Mary Lou Grosskreutz thought that she weighed a little bit less and was testifying about that. And I would also hasten that if every woman who testified in about that her weight was a little bit lower than it actually was, I'm afraid we'd have a spate of those called liars. And although I know that I've read the dissent to the Carradine case quite thoroughly, and I know that there was concern by you that in that case the ALJ had not made any deep logical flaws, and that to second guess his credibility finding on that situation was probably not the correct thing to do. But here we have a different situation, because here, in initially failing to properly consider the fibromyalgia that was supported by a record full of multiple tender points, trigger points, the ALJ started his analysis with deep legal flaws. And so if there are no further questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Thanks very much. Good morning, Ms. Pedersen.
May it please the court, counsel. Danielle Pedersen on behalf of Social Security. The analysis of fibromyalgia begins with the presence of trigger and tender points, but it does not end there. Although Sarche did recognize that a diagnosis of fibromyalgia may not be rejected based on the absence of objective findings other than trigger points, Sarche and more recently Estop, both decisions of this court, went on to note that medical literature is clear that fibromyalgia is rarely disabling. Once the trigger points and the tender points have been used to diagnose fibromyalgia, that is only the beginning of the analysis. What has to go on then is to determine to what extent is the fibromyalgia disabling. And the Estop court made very clear that the mere presence of a diagnosis of a condition, even a condition like fibromyalgia, does not somehow automatically equate with the finding that that impairment is completely disabling. When determining whether or not the impairment is disabling, one must go on to other important factors such as the person's ability to move about freely without pain. That's where range of motion becomes relevant. The person's ability to, say, get on and off an examination table, to walk, to move about, their ability to do daily activities and things of that nature. That's the type of objective evidence that is relevant in every case, even a case involving fibromyalgia.
Why does the judge just ignore this Karras report, which
Your Honor,
is pretty,
the judge,
pretty strong stuff, I thought.
It's difficult to say why the Karras report is not mentioned in the ALJ's decision, Your Honor.
It's mentioned, it's discredited.
The vocational report we're talking about now, Mr. Karras?
No. The ALJ discredited it as unsupported by the record.
Well, Your Honor, certainly it is unsupported by the record, and that was reasonable to find that, since that report was based on nothing more than the physician's opinions and Ms. Grosskreutz's own subjective complaints. And the ALJ had already thoroughly evaluated those two pieces of evidence, and it was therefore unnecessary to go into any greater detail on the Karras report. The other point I would like to make about fibromyalgia, this is not a pure fibromyalgia case. In other words, it's not the only impairment we're talking about here. This woman was in a very unhappy fashion. She was working with disabled children. She was grabbed, my understanding is, by a large child and wrenched by her left arm. She has an acute injury to the left arm and the back. This isn't just a fibromyalgia case.
Right. Doesn't this make this a stronger case?
Your Honor, what it makes is a case for objective evidence. It's not unreasonable for the ALJ to consider the objective medical evidence because there were impairments here, the arm impairment and the back impairment, that can be quantified by objective medical evidence, like range of motion, strength, reflexes, straight leg raising, and in this case, all of those things were consistently normal.
You're becoming a neurologist.
Not at all, Your Honor. In fact, a rheumatologist is the person who most deals with fibromyalgia. And again, I just want to note for this court, the end of this discussion isn't trigger points. It's proper to look at the objective evidence. The ALJ looked at that evidence properly, but his analysis of this case went much further than that. Now, counsel invites this court to sort of lose sight of the forest for the trees in this case, and spends a great deal of time going one by one to every one of the ALJ's credibility points and trying to sort of pick them apart and show this court how the ALJ could have drawn a different reasonable inference from each of those facts.
I think should is a better term.
Well, in her mind, obviously, Your Honor, she feels that he should have done that. But this court knows full well that the fact that different inferences could have been drawn from the same facts does not the end of the analysis. This court is only asked to determine whether the inferences drawn by the ALJ were in fact reasonable, whether or not other reasonable inferences might have been drawn as well. I'd like to go back to the spasms again because this, I think, is very important. This woman, this was not a confusion of someone who had an 11th grade education. This was someone who said she had spasms, and she described those spasms. She described them as a quaking and shaking in her muscles. Now, trigger points are simply points on the body that when palpated or pressed are painful. They aren't spasms. They can't be mistaken for spasms. They don't quake or spasm or cause that type of behavior. Therefore, it was perfectly reasonable for the ALJ to say there's no evidence of spasms. This woman says she's racked constantly by spasms, and yet there is not any, there's only one note of minor spasms at one point, but there's no consistent report of spasms in the record, and that was a completely reasonable interpretation of the evidence on the part of the ALJ. I'd also like to note that the weight issue was not simply sort of a confusion.
Well, there was medical evidence that she did suffer from spasms. So.
Your Honor, there was one notation by a doctor that said she had mild spasms on one or two occasions, but there is not
three occasions.
Okay, well, Your Honor, she said she has constant spasms that rack her all day long, and there's certainly no evidence of that in this record, and
look,
it was reasonable.
The examining doctor observed spasms at least three times. The examining doctors aren't, you know, with her day and night.
Your Honor, again, I believe that she reported spasms on some occasions, but I was only able to obtain one or two times in the record that doctors actually observed significant muscle spasm. The other thing that I'd like to point out, this woman is alleging pain, constant pain at a level 9 or 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. Now, pain at a 9 or 10 is pain so excruciating that you cannot speak, you cannot move, you cannot function on any level. And yet this is a woman who admitted to, while they were a reduced range of activities, certainly a broad range of activities, which included gardening, shopping, driving her son to and from school and taking care of him, and doing various things around the house. It was certainly reasonable for the ALJ to find that this, some activities were inconsistent with these complaints of such extremely severe pain, and to find that that was evidence of symptom magnification. I want to speak just
the
briefly.
The sheriff's report said that she had to change her position every 5 or 10 minutes. I presume that had something to do with pain. And she was grimacing, holding her left shoulder with her right hand, having difficulty concentrating, and so on. So there's plenty of evidence that she was in pain.
I mean, again, Your Honor, her pain behaviors, that while noted in a place where she was being evaluated specifically for a disability claim, is still her subjective complaints, her subjective behaviors. We have to go back to the evidence in this record. It was reasonable for the ALJ to note that there simply weren't the types of findings that would show that this woman was so completely disabled.
We have to do is wonder why the ALJ didn't even mention the carriage report.
Well, again, a moment ago, Your Honor, I believe you
yes.
stated that he specifically mentioned it and rejected it.
Or I should say rejected.
Your Honor, again, the Karras report, this is a one-time vocational exam, lasted a few hours. It consisted of aptitude, interest, and skill tests,
like
which don't have anything to do with physical or mental
disabilities. Like we have in almost every one of these cases. Look, at a minimum, the ALJ should discuss Karras' report. At a minimum, the ALJ should have told us why it wasn't relevant. And at a minimum, his failure to do so is legal error, which warrants a remand.
Your Honor, under the cases of this court, that is not always the case. The question is whether or not the errors are harmless. And the district court properly looked at some of these things and agreed that while they didn't agree with everything the ALJ said or did, the ultimate question is, was it harmless error?
That's right. That's why we have a court of appeal.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And we urge this court to find, as you did in Jens, that even though the ALJ might have made some errors that you considered to be problematic, that ultimately his findings are not patently wrong. They are supported by substantial evidence in the record, and that remanding this case simply to get a better ALJ decision would not serve any useful purpose except to unnecessarily prolong this case and frivolously waste government time and funds. We therefore ask you to affirm the Commissioner's decision that this woman was not disabled and not entitled to disability benefits.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I just have a few points here. To begin with, the vocational report with Mr. Karras was not done for her disability case. The growth crises were very indigent, and they were seeking resource help through the department, through the state of Wisconsin. The state of Wisconsin then referred Mary Lou to DVR for a vocational assessment to see if they could help her with either job placement or schooling. So it wasn't actually done to further her disability claim, which I think makes it that much more that much stronger. Second of all, although it's a small point, she reported her pain at a level of 8 and 9 out of 10, not 9 and 10, but nevertheless, she reported spasms. She was taking medication for spasms. Her doctor, on a few occasions, reported that she had spasms. Their doctor reported trigger points, multiple trigger points, tender points, just about all of the time. And although, yes, that's the diagnostic categorization, it also supports the fact that she is having complaints of pain. And the ALJ didn't get this right from the get-go. These were not harmless errors. And we ask that you remand this case so that a proper evaluation can be done. And despite the resources, Mary Lou is entitled to that. And I thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Goldblum, and thank you, Ms. Pedersen. And the case will be taken under advisement. We will go on to the next case.